Welcome to episode 41 of Do Care Podcast.
This podcast is about queer intersectional feminism and artistry and all topics related to that. It's essentially things that we just care about.
Today we will be discussing Reflection Collective, which is a film workshop and community building exercise created by our friend Amanda Madden.
Awesome.
I am your host, Mary McGee, pronouns she, they.
And I am your other host, Georgie Corkery, pronouns also she, they.
Today, our special guest is Amanda Madden. We are so excited to talk about Amanda's queer community building work in the film community. And let's have a moment to introduce yourself.
My name's Amanda Madden, and my pronouns are they, them.
Awesome. So, Amanda, besides community building and filmmaking, which I know you care about, because this is the Do Care podcast, we're going to go around and say something that we do care about just briefly here. Mary, let's start with you.
I care about clean air quality.
That's a good one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Especially right now.
I care about rest.
Yes. I love that. I think rest is so underappreciated.
Yeah. I've been resting hard lately.
I care about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. I care about the existing survival guides for the queer community to help them survive through the holidays. So if you guys haven't Googled those, you should Google them. And I care about them a lot because I think they've helped me. And rest is a huge part of it.
Yeah, I mean, you get so triggered, especially being queer in the holidays.
Family, with family and expectations.
Capitalism.
And travel.
And it's so much on your body and on your soul. And we live in such a capitalist, busy society.
And we have weird traditions.
Yeah, and like the vilification of rest. And so to be able to take care of yourself first and your body.
Yeah.
Because we as queer individuals, our bodies are important.
Yes. Before we jump into the Reflection Collective, we have three icebreakers that we can try to keep brief, but they never end up being that brief.
It's okay. What a fun way to break ice. Let's start with some of the cats we've seen recently. I'll start. I've hung out with my friend's cat. His name is Zed. His full name is Miao Zedong. He is a big boy, a Siamese fighter. He's so bulky and spicy. I wish I could call him a sweetheart. That's not true. He's just a very beautiful, scary cat.
Okay. I've also hung out with it's some mix, but also a Siamese cat, and her name is Freya. I watched this cat, and she's so cute. Hmm. She has, like, the big blue eyes, and the owner, Elise, who is a professor and asked me to watch the cat and paid me well. Thank you, Elise, for watching Freya, because she was so cute. But Elise, this is her first cat, and she didn't know what a lion's cut was when she brought Freya in. And they're like, do you want a lion's cut? And she's like, sure. And so she picked up Freya.
Where they do the mane and the fluffy paws.
Yeah,
because
she has long hair. And she's just like, my God. But now that it's grown out a little bit, I think she's super adorable. So that's the cat that I've been hanging out with.
That's sweet.
That's cool.
Isn't Freya Norse god whose chariot was carried by cats?
Oh, I don't know.
Whoa.
That's cool.
We'll look that up later.
What cats have you seen, Amanda?
Well, I am a dog person, I'll be honest, but I do like cats.
We'll give you a pass.
I did meet a cat recently whose name was Steve, and she's Steve, and I loved that so much. And it was somebody I did not expect to be playing with gender in that way, and I don't even know if they know they're playing with gender in that way, but I liked it.
They're like, yeah, it's like Stevie Nicks, but Steve.
Yeah, which I'm like,
it's a cat, gender doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah. And I also kind of feel that, you know, I'm like, every name is a gender neutral name, but it still was kind of fun to have a Steve the girl cat.
I knew a Frank the girl cat, and I really love
it. Yeah, it's nice.
And I want to say the reason why we talk about cats is because thinking about cute things floods us with the good hormones, endorphins. So we hope that anybody listening to this is thinking about cute cats and they're like happier because they get flooded
with those serotonin. What a nice thought.
Yeah, that was originally why I was like, yeah, if we think about cute things, I mean, if we look up pictures of cats, we're like a little happier. So why not talk about them and listeners can think about cats.
I do like that you started this with cats. and not like animals. It's funny, as a cat person, I'm like, well, obviously they're cuter. So obviously you get more serotonin.
I mean, cats and dogs are equally cute, but we don't need to get into that battle right now. What we can talk about is the wildlife we've seen recently, our icebreaker number two. You want to start, Amanda?
I don't know. I haven't really seen any wildlife lately. I'm kind of drawing a blank on this one, except for the squirrel. Okay, this was kind of weird. I recently found an eggplant in my backyard. Just a full eggplant in the middle of the yard, and I have no idea how it got there. So I don't know if that counts as wildlife, but it was weird.
Maybe it's some weird real life emoji thing that your friends
I don't know. I was like, did somebody throw it in? Yeah. I know, that's not the emoji I want in my backyard.
It's just the first thing I thought of. Actually, someone's like,
I know. Weird, right?
It's so odd. And an eggplant is such an odd,
like, of all the, yeah.
I'm really not moving away from the fact that they were doing a live emoji.
That's the first place really I wish. It feels like the only logical explanation.
Who would do that? And why?
Well, I can tell you that I have seen a lot of those fox squirrels. They're the big kind of yellowish ones.
Oh.
And there's red squirrels, which I think look like foxes, so I've often mixed them up. But they're just fox squirrels. They're big and they're yellow and they're everywhere and they're invasive. They don't make loud chirping noises that can be alarming in the morning to me like the red squirrels do. But they're everywhere and it's making me really sad because I realize they're really taking over red squirrel territory. But I also did see a bunch of house finches up at Snowbird today because I went skiing for the first time in 15 years with my family.
That's cool.
It's weird.
recently, actually, this is right outside your house.
I saw
three little raccoons.
What? Oh.
Scurrying around. I thought they were cats. But they were like...
Mary's making weird motions. I can't describe them.
They're like a raccoon, I guess.
Yeah. Raccoons.
Outside my house here?
Yeah, it was at night, and there was three of them. And
were you leaving
my house?
Do
you think they're here now?
They're in the building.
They're actually my three roommates upstairs. It's a triplex.
You met Steve, Frank, and George.
That's so funny.
Yes. All thems.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, keep an eye out for the raccoons.
Yeah.
You know, all the squirrels here. Cool. Well, I should say the reason why we do wildlife is because we are connected to our environment, and seeing the wildlife around us kind of connects us to that. And I am a birder. We step outside and you see birds, you hear birds, but not a lot of people think about them as wildlife and as us inhabiting the same space as them. I'm not a great birder, so I can't tell you all the birds that I've seen and heard recently, but a house finch is one of them. So
cool. I like this prompt a lot because as like a city person, I don't go in nature a lot. So I'm not seeing cool, fun, interesting wildlife. It's always like little squirrels or little birds or trash animals running around at night. So it is nice to be like, oh, we live in a world with all these other creatures among us.
Yeah.
I love that.
Take a look.
I love just thinking about us as wildlife,
too.
Yeah,
we are.
And we are, yeah.
I also saw a black widow.
Ooh.
I think that's important to add. I forgot about that.
Me too! But it was not in the wildlife.
Yeah, it was actually in the kitchen.
Oh, mine was on a couch. And for a set, I was working on this play, and they moved the couch.
Yeah.
And the black widow crawled out.
They're all coming inside right now. So, sorry to freak anybody out. Scary. I did take all my black widows to the high school I used to work at because the kids loved them. They had, like, a little terrarium.
You get so scared of snakes, and black widows are, like, that primal fear. Where, like, I see them and my whole body
shuts down.
That's
how I feel about snakes,
yeah, I really... Mary's seen it. I jump.
Even if it's, like, a little...
It was a baby, yeah. Well, our last prompt is, do you have any conscious content consumption? And I'll explain why we do this before you share. But we have a lot of media coming in at us, and we... And, I mean, if you're my age, which is 30 and, 2023, you grew up with it. You grew up with TV. You grew up with news. Now we have Instagram and TikTok and billboards. I think that counts. And sometimes they don't share good messages with us. I wanted to have a resource for good conscious content consumption that shared good messages that made us feel good, whether that's like an Instagram person or a movie. And Mary is the one who has conscious content to share today between the two of us. Yeah. And then Amanda, we'll let you go.
Today, I am shouting out a TikTok creator. On TikTok, their name is Aria Vels, but their other handles are Critical Lesbian. They are a lesbian sapphic film critic. They have this whole database of sapphic film and TV shows.
Oh, my gosh.
And then they just go and review them and... It's such a great resource, and they even have things like, oh, are you looking for a non-period comedy that features queer women?
Huh. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Can I ask, what does sapphic mean?
Well, sapphic.
Great question.
Sapphos from ancient Greece, who, I forget if she was a god or just a person of ancient Greece, but... founded this whole island of Lesbos.
Oh, I know those islands. Well, I don't know them, but I know about them.
Supposedly a bunch of gays, theys, and femmes.
Gays, theys, and
femmes. That's cute. Hanging out, being queer, doing lady magic, and that's where and we
like,
get
let's
the
call
word
them Lesbos.
Lesbians and sapphic. And the way I interpret sapphic is more fab-leaning.
AFAB for folks listening who don't know what that means. It's assigned female at birth. You're welcome, Mom. My mom doesn't know that. She's probably listening. AFAB.
Yeah. So sapphics are all those dykey people you meet.
Cool. Love that. Amanda, do you have anything that you want to share?
Is a book okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
I do a lot of books.
Okay, cool. I just finished the Lilith's Brood series by Octavia Butler, and I'm on a mission right now to read everything that Octavia Butler has ever written.
Why do I know that name?
So she's a black feminist sci-fi writer from the 70s.
That's why. Okay.
And she's very prophetic. She's just amazing. I feel changed having read her. I've just been going through all of her work, and I'm probably maybe halfway through everything she's written.
Cool.
But this last series is about this alien race merging with humanity, and yeah, it's so amazing, and I feel like there are so many survival lessons for the current apocalypse that we live in that she has to teach us, and she has this way of sort of being really honest about reality in this way that like allows us to imagine new futures together. So
that's cool.
She's like changed my life. I think everybody should read her.
Okay.
Yeah. Highly recommend.
Books I'll buy next.
Excellent.
Not that I need to buy any more right now. Thanks so much for sharing that.
Yeah.
I'll definitely link both of those conscious content consumption items in the show notes.
I think that really transitions us into our topic for today.
Can you take a moment to describe what is Reflection Collective?
Yeah, thanks for asking. I'm so excited to talk about it. I don't get that many chances to talk about it. So Reflection Collective is a project that I started this year, and it's a series of workshops and gatherings. It's really focused on using creative practice as a tool for self-reflection and introspection and connection. So I know that sounds like a lot of words, and it kind of is this abstract idea, but for me, I've thought a lot about how every creative project I've ever done in my life has totally transformed me and made me like a better version of myself. And I've learned so much through those processes, and I've learned so much about myself, and I've learned about how to connect with others, and I've learned about how to be in the world. And I wanted a creative space where people could come together and use creativity as a radical tool for change in that way, rather than necessarily making something for consumption or for money or for prestige or for whatever it is. And all those things are great and fine, and we have to do that as artists. But I really wanted to make sort of like a sacred space where we could really dig into creative process as like a growth and a healing and a change tool.
It's so healing.
It's so healing. Yeah.
It's so cathartic.
So that's kind of what it is, like, conceptually. Yeah. And then, like, logistically, I can explain
absolutely.
That, too.
Yeah. So it started a year ago. Like, what was the impetus for starting that?
I've thought about doing this for probably, like, a decade. This has been, like, building in me because I am an artist. I make films and I make art. And I'm also a facilitator and a teacher. So I've also been, you know, I've been teaching for 10 years in different community organizations in different capacities. And then the third thing is, like, I love building community. So I've always kind of wondered, like, what's the way that I combine these three passions? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've always kind of half joked that I want to start a radical film school in the desert, which I do want to do that. But I was like, how do I start that now?
I was just talking to someone. I'm like, all I want is like a film collective.
Yes.
We just all hang out and then we make films and art together.
And so many people want that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's sometimes a matter of just doing it. So look at you. Starting it, at least.
Something I've been thinking about a lot this year is planting seeds for long arcs of something. And I mean that in like many different ways, not thinking so short term, but I am thinking at this point in my life, I'm thinking more about how can I just plant a seed for something that might be something in 10 years, or it might be something after I'm gone. But what am I nurturing right now? And so this project feels something that I think I'll probably work on my whole life, and it will grow over my whole life and beyond, maybe beyond, I don't know, but there's not a lot of pressure on it right now. I just can make it my own and really listen to what can I do that has the most integrity.
That's really cool.
This year I taught 3 filmmaking workshops that were either 2 parts or 3 parts, and everything's virtual because I'm also interested in connecting people like across time and space. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing I did was I hosted something called the Artist Solidarity Club, which is a monthly meetup group for artists of any kind. And it's kind of like a support group for artists. Like, we just gather for an hour and we just kind of talk about what's going on in our practice, what's working, where are we stuck. Sometimes we look at specific topics. Like, the last one was about rage and grief and how that impacts our creativity. Mm-hmm. But again, it's just another space where we can talk about all the complexity of what it means to be an artist and a creative person.
Yeah. God, that's beautiful.
That's a really good lens to look through, just thinking about grief. Maybe it's all the content that I've been consuming, but to me, everything right now has been about either grief or babies and birth. And it's a weird dualism. But I feel like everyone right now is kind of grieving something, whether it's the long days or the clean air, or there's 2 wars going on and lots of people are dying. And that's hard to stomach. It's hard to just read on breaking news from the New York Times.
And then as artists, what do we do with that?
Yeah,
and what's our responsibility? That's what we talked about too. What is our responsibility as artists? I would say we have a responsibility as artists to hold space for rage and grief, both our own and others.
Holding space and witnessing, I think, is such an important part of the artist experience. And then telling the stories. Can you talk a little bit more about some of these workshops you're teaching?
Yeah. I'll talk about the last one I did called Intergenerational Interviewing.
Oh.
It's a mouthful.
Wow.
I say that 3 times fast. Mary's trying. But the idea with that one was that it was over 3 days, and I asked participants to come with somebody in mind that was either older than them or younger than them that they wanted to interview and do a little video profile of. And so then in the first part, we sort of like prepared for the interview, then folks did their interviews, then we talked about editing, and then in the last one, we showed everybody our final pieces and celebrated them
really
together.
Cool.
And it was really amazing. Somebody interviewed their 94-year-old grandmother, and somebody else interviewed their 14-year-old nephew, and there's like a neighbor and like somebody that somebody just really admired that they wanted to get to know better. And so it was an opportunity to make something and have accountability and deadlines. But we also had some really good conversations about intergenerational wisdom and how much we have to learn when we expand across age. And then also sort of breaking down the power dynamics of an interview process, because that's something I think about a lot is ethics in documentary filmmaking. It's like one of my favorite topics. Yeah. And so, you know, there is a power dynamic in an interview, right? Somebody holds this responsibility to shape it and edit it and to ask questions with care. And so we just had some like really beautiful discussions about how do you care for your participants? How do you take care of them? How do you make them feel like they're really being accurately reflected in the way that they see themselves?
Yeah. Can I ask you a tangential question?
Yeah.
Do you know about the documentary subject?
Yes. Yes, I do know about it. Because I also work at the Utah Film Center, and we showed that film.
Yeah, I know. I listened to Radio West.
Yeah.
And so they talked all about it. Subject is a documentary that brings in people who were the quote-unquote subject of other documentaries and how that affected their personal lives. And how maybe they weren't treated so well in the representation and how that fallout happened. Because if you're in a documentary, and I think it was a true crime documentary that sparked this.
Yeah.
And it was all about somebody's dad. And then, yeah, it shaped their life in a really weird way. And it was a filmmaker. And she went on to make this. I haven't seen it, but I really want to see it.
It's really great. It's really worth watching. I got to interview facilitate a meetup group for filmmakers with the producer and one of the main participants Margie Ratliff, who's in it. Yeah. And yeah, it's really cool. I feel like I think things are changing, and that documentary is such a good sign of it, because they're providing a bunch of resources around the film. Like there's a really great group called the Documentary Accountability Working Group that's doing some really beautiful work around ethical documentary filmmaking. So
cool. We'll link them in the show notes. And subject.
Documentary.
I want to chat about who's taking these classes? Who are you serving? Who's showing up to these?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's been an interesting mix of folks, people from all over the country.
Oh, wow.
A big part of it for me is making filmmaking accessible. I feel like there's a lot of gatekeeping in filmmaking, maybe more than any other art. It's just so extreme.
It's so bro-y and it's so exclusionary.
There's a lot of barriers, and one of those barriers is just this idea, and this is a bro-y part, it's just the gear. Don't get me wrong, I love to work with a really fancy camera if I have access to it, you know, and but I also think that a lot of that has been really limiting to the artistry that's possible. Mm-hmm. So I'm really promoting people just using their phones.
And
you know,
if
you have a piece of paper and a pencil, you can draw something. If you have a phone, which most of us do, you can be a filmmaker.
Yeah, or a podcaster.
Yeah, totally. I'm trying to make it really accessible. And so I guess part of that is I don't want it to be for people who already have film experience. This is really for people who have, and I've had folks who have some experience come, and then folks who don't have any. And so kind of it varies in terms of experience. It varies in terms of other demographics. And it's also really small right now. I've had 5 or 6 people per workshop, and I've had to undo some internalized capitalism stuff in my head where it's when you start a project and you're the idea is to get bigger and to have more people and, and that's
really amount of money.
Yeah. I mean,
ROI result.
And I'm trying to think about not necessarily it getting bigger, but it going deeper. And ooh. I think the way that that will look is that we will be having really good conversations. People will be making interesting art, and they will feel good about the process. And those that's the ROI, those are the metrics.
Yeah.
So I'm not worried about it growing slowly. And at the
success looking a
certain way. Yeah, totally. But at the same time, I do think that with consistency and commitment and a group of people that's really deciding to dig in together, a lot does become possible. And so I can see potential of more people being part of this project and that fueling it to become something even deeper.
In 10 years, 15, 20, 30
years. Yeah, who knows? Yeah.
I keep thinking about how you said every project you've done has really changed you and really shaped you. And, you make films, and then Mary, you do plays, and you recently you were in a film. I don't know if you call it a film.
But yeah. I do production design.
Yeah. So you're both part of really big projects. And I'm thinking, the biggest thing I've done was started this
little podcast, and
it's not little at all. I mean,
you've been doing this for a year, right? The long time.
Yeah, since 2020.
Since 2020, my God.
And like, think about who you were when you started. I bet you're different than
who you are. I think you can hear it.
This is an art form in and of itself.
Yeah. And this was my creative outlet. You know, I wanted to meet people who I thought were doing really cool things, and I wanted to collaborate and, get to know stuff like this so that I could insert myself in the lives of the interviewees and become friends. That was the ultimate goal, to become friends. So nice. You may or may not be locked in, but
I'm in.
Fine, I guess we'll be best friends for mine.
But I also love when you said you can hear it in the podcast. Mm-hmm. I think it's really cool when our transformations kind of get subtly documented in the work itself, and you can see change like that.
You take pictures of yourself every day.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm a different person than I was a year ago.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or like journaling is so important. And,
right.
And art. And like I look at the stuff I was writing and making and like myself as an artist.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wrote a poem from 7 years ago, and it was pretty bad.
But it's also so special to have that. You know, I feel that way about my films, because up to this point, I've been making really personal work where I'm always in it. And so I see myself on screen, and it is like the weirdest. I'm like, I know who that person is, but it's not me. But it is me. It's just like a really...
I think it's important.
Yeah.
And that's why I thought journaling was important, and I think everyone should do that. And sometimes people are like, well, I don't want to look back because it's so cringy. It's like, yeah, but you're not that person anymore.
And not even on a personal level. I think it's so big, like on an archaeological level, on a historical level, to be able to look back at who we were as people.
Yeah.
And
I secretly want someone like 100, 200 years from now to read my journal and be like, whoa.
See, I want all my journals burned.
Yeah, and I used to
like,
do that. I used to like write it and then I would burn it because I didn't want any record of myself.
I think it's funny that both of you would want to burn yours. Burn it, because you make films. And you're getting into that.
Theater is so ephemeral, though, so it's gone.
Yeah, that's true.
It's gone forever.
Okay, well, I guess it makes sense for you.
It doesn't make sense for me. I think it's hard to look back. I journal every day, but I rarely look back. And I think for me, it's more of an embodied practice. For me, it's like a physical thing. I just have to get stuff out on the page. But I do find it kind of overwhelming to go back into that space and look at it.
So how are you navigating that in this space where you're creating introspection and reflection?
Well, I think with my films, those I can look back at because I created such containers around them, and there were sort of boundaries in place around how much I was willing to. Whereas journaling for me is more of a place I can just throw anything.
Yeah.
My films, and I kind of learned this with a film that I finished in 2020 that was about this artist who was an amazing artist from the early 1900s, radical feminist. Before the word feminism was even
What's their name?
Her name is Baroness Elsa von Freytag Loringhoven.
Wow.
Yeah, she was a baroness because she just married a baron because she just wanted to be a baroness.
She had that name pre?
She was Elsa before that. Oh. But yeah. Amazing artist. Like, just did performance art, did sculpture, did all these things. And so I learned about her. Nobody knew about her. And I was like, oh my God, another woman who has been like lost to history. This is wild. And so the project was me trying to channel her.
Mm.
And in that process, I went to some really weird internal places, and it really taught me that I need to have boundaries around my work and around my creation, especially when I'm putting myself on screen.
Yeah.
It actually got kind of scary, you know, there for a minute. I just felt like a little, like my edges were a little too blurry.
So permeable.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I think, that process definitely taught me to like have boundaries around creation.
Yeah.
In order to be really free within the container, you know?
Well, I think that's how a lot of good art is made. I think of about when I was in art class. I took so many classes in high school and middle school and undergrad. And I was like, Kate, here's the assignment, and here are the boundaries, go nuts.
Yeah.
And within the boundaries or the medium, it always ended up being so good.
What is that, like art grows in constraint?
Yeah.
And then when I was thrown out into the world, I was like, well, I want to keep making art, but I don't know what medium, I don't know.
I wanted journal prompts for art.
Well, I think that's a big goal of mine with Reflection Collective, is I really want to help hold space and create containers for other people to really explore within. So a lot of it is accountability practices. I'm going to provide structure, and then you just have to play within that structure. And hopefully, if I can hold that space, then there's a lot of freedom for people to explore within it.
Yeah.
I think play is really important, too. Yeah. I think experimentation is really important. Yeah, and like, I think as artists,
messy,
we're like...
bad art.
Yeah. I think we're like often trying to figure out how to sustain ourselves as artists too. And so there aren't that many. And this, I mean, I would say the same thing about queerness, I think. Would I? Yes. I'm like,
let's hear it.
I'm trying this out for the first time. We're always figuring out how to sustain ourselves, how to be whole. And so I think having a space where we can really play and really experiment is kind of rare and really sacred and really special, but also like so important to the process. In terms of queerness, I just think about how we root into our identities and we figure them out and we name them and we hold them so securely because we have to. Right, in the culture that we're in, but how beautiful to have spaces where we can try things. I really crave places where people can try out names for the first time, try out pronouns, try out
clothes, makeup,
identities, and it's safe to do that. Nobody's holding you. And I think it's as artists, it's the same thing. Places that we can try something, that we can do something we don't normally do, that we can experiment, that we can just be silly and playful. I think that's really, really important to the process.
I think that's important for everyone.
Yeah.
And I mean, the way you explained it makes a lot of sense. Be able to play. I shit on E11 and Burning Man. E11 is like the local Burning Man. But I think for some people, that's the only space where they get to play with fun outfits, with music, with dancing, with acting silly with their friends, with drugs. It's like a chance for them to be weird, and they don't get that a lot. And I'm always like, well, why don't you just do that at home not pay a bunch for it and not burn things in the desert? But my friends like to go, and I'm not going to stop them. I'm just not going to go with them. But yeah, it's a chance to play in the creativity. That's a huge part.
Totally.
I actually want to give you a moment if you want to chat about any other community building projects you've been a part of.
Yeah. I've always been interested in creating community and experimenting with community building. And so I guess other community projects, one would be Iowa House, which was/is a dinner potluck dinner that me and my partner hosted in our home for 2 years for queer and trans people in Salt Lake City. And we thought about it as an experiment from the very beginning, and it definitely has been an experiment. We've like learned a lot in that process and met some really amazing people.
An experiment. What were your observations from that?
At the beginning, a part of it was that I was relatively new to moving back to Salt Lake, and I was looking around and I was like, where are all the queers? I see flags everywhere, but I can't find the people. And so the idea was like, oh, I'll just see if people want to come to my backyard. And people did. People started showing up. And so I think the first thing I learned is just that there's like a real yearning in Salt Lake City for queer community. We're all trying to find each other. Mm-hmm. And I was surprised about the conversations that came up in that space. I mean, I guess I shouldn't have been really, but I think one of the things I've learned is just that queer community in Salt Lake City is a really particular thing. We have like really particular challenges here. Like the religious trauma definitely comes into play, but also our legislature and the environment we're in. And
it creates its own limitations.
It creates its own limitations. And I think there's something like really sort of tender and tense about queer community in Salt Lake City, from my perspective, is that we are both like yearning to find each other so much. And we are also being directly attacked by our government and our legislature. And I think sometimes we come at each other in that space in this way that feels pretty extreme here, honestly. And I don't know. I have some big questions around how we are. The experiment really in the beginning was like, we didn't want to have a party every week. We wanted to build deep, sustaining community, people that would like show up for each other and resource each other. And in some ways, we have gotten that out of that experiment. And I think other people have found that with each other because they met there in that space. And that's like really beautiful. But it's also been really challenging, you know, the ways that people have come and gone and having sort of like rifts in community that I couldn't have anticipated. And some of that's been really painful and strange. And so, yeah, we're shifting it a little bit now to because we don't exactly know. Yeah. We don't exactly know. And we're kind of looking at it and we're like, well, we don't, in some ways we have what we wanted, but in some ways like we really don't have what we wanted. And so maybe we need to try something different.
Yeah. I wonder how it's different in other places. I grew up in Utah. I've left a few times, but I haven't really been a part of a queer community anywhere else. And I used to be part of the Utah Pride Center community before 2020 when a bunch of things happened at the center that I'm not going to get into here, but essentially my Pride family fell apart and we still have each other. And whenever I see those people, I'm really excited. And for a long time, that was a part of a network that I could rely on. Then kind of what you explained, something that you want out of it is like this network of people that care about each other and can support each other and bring each other up. And yeah, I wonder how maybe that's different than other places you've been.
Yeah, I wonder about it too. I mean, I lived in New York for a long time. And so I think that's what I'm comparing it to, just because that's where I was for the longest. And I don't, you know, it's like hard. We all have, all these places have all these different factors. I have this theory that here there's just so many pressures on us that it kind of adds this tension. The, you know, the political attacks, that's like one pressure. But I don't know, I'm just like, the air we're breathing is shit. Yeah. Like that's another pressure. But I've been really interested in cancel culture this year and really learning a lot about it and really exploring, just trying to understand it better. And I think through different experiences and different things that I have explored, I really see cancel culture as this, it's like in the air we breathe, and it's like a major tool of dominant systems to keep us separated from each other. It's like you can just see the big bad guys sitting back being like, okay, we don't have to do anything because these people will tear each other apart and will cut and cut and cut until there's nothing left. And in Adrienne Marie Brown's We Will Not Cancel Us, they talk about the idea of the feeding frenzy. And it's like in the wild, that's when there's so much prey that all the animals are there and they're just biting. Like it's a frenzy. And so of course somebody's arm gets bitten or somebody's leg gets bitten because it's just mayhem. And I'm like, oh, that's what's happening. Like there, we are in this state of experiencing so much hurt as a community, so much fear, so much violence that like, of course we come at the people who are closest to us because we're not meant to hold this much pain and this much hurt, and it has to have an outlet. And a lot of the systems that are creating this violence feel really out of our reach. And so then I think we're more likely to come at each other, and we have to like really actively resist that urge to do that if we're going to build deep sustaining community that's going to last.
Yeah. I have two questions. The first one is, are you thinking about this, the idea of cancel culture, because you're hoping to maybe do something with it creatively to discuss it more? And then the second question is, I wonder if you see this frenzy as a result of a pendulum swing, right? We have a lot of people who grow up in the dominant religion here and told to live a certain way, and then they figure out that's not for them, and maybe they feel like free of it. And then the pendulum swings to the other side. And there's kind of a joke in Utah where, you know, once you leave the church, then you, like, you have to try all the drugs. You have to try all the sex. You have to, like, live out the teen years that you never got. And then you have a bunch of adults kind of acting a little younger and a little immature, even though they know better, but it's the pendulum swing. And I wonder if you think that has anything to do with it here, and it's happening everywhere.
Yeah.
The cancel culture thing, but
I think that's a really good articulation of it. I hadn't thought about it that way, but that makes a lot of sense to me. And I do want to make art about cancel culture, but it's like, I mean, the funny part of that is it's like the scariest thing to make art about totally. Because you're like, well, somebody's going to cancel me for making this art.
That's funny.
So, yeah.
I think let's talk about your experiences as a queer filmmaker and like why film as a medium?
Mm. Oh, I love this question. Very excited. I always wanted to be a filmmaker. I would like make movies when I was a little kid, and I was like, I'm just going to be a filmmaker, and that's what I did. Like, I'm very one track mind about it.
You're so lucky.
Yeah.
People as kids, what they wanted to be then is not.
Yeah. But I just think film is such a cool medium. For a few reasons. I think one is that it's sort of an impossible medium. It's like you're combining all of these things. You're literally combining every art form, like performance and visual art and audio and
lighting
and time. It's like it's everything and writing.
I'm thinking about like the audio for this podcast, and it's like you have that. And lighting, audio and makeup is a black hole that you can go down.
Yeah. And special effects.
Yeah. And people, like performers. And
it's, the editing of it is an art form. And
so I think there's something about that that's really interesting. I feel like it's impossible. It should never work. And so then the fact that it does sometimes is like this amazing, amazing thing. Yeah. So I really love that about it. I really love the way film plays with time and space and alters our experience with time and space. And I know in my heart that time is nonlinear anyway. And so I feel like film kind of like sheds light on that. And it kind of like cracks that open a little bit, kind of like disrupts the way that we're typically interacting with time and space. And I also think that when I'm making films, I really think when you push record on the camera, you change the space you're in completely.
Yeah.
And it's sacred. That space is sacred. And you're entering this portal where time and space are different things. And I think if you open yourself up to that portal and really like let yourself be in it, you can explore things in a really powerful way that no other space allows for. Also, the importance of documentation and representation. As queer people, I really want to make a project about queer birth. That's like something I'm like trying to develop right now. And the the whole impetus for that project is that it's only until very recently that I've like thought of having kids myself, because I didn't see anybody who was doing it in a way I could imagine it was possible.
Yeah.
And so the power of filmmaking to like show people that something's possible that they didn't think was possible is, you know.
It's so unbelievably powerful.
Yeah.
And to finally see yourself and to see a possibility.
Yeah.
You never imagined.
Yeah.
Wow. That's such a cool idea. I really hope you make a film about that.
Me too. Me
Can
too.
Can you talk about some of the films you've already made? I know you just came out with A Spell for Queer Home.
Yeah.
And Memory Map was for the Davy Fest, right? In 2022?
Okay. Yeah.
So I have to say, I came into this as the one who was the blank slate here. So yeah, I'd love to hear the names of each film and then just a snippet about what they were about.
I'll talk about A Spell for a Queer Home because that's the most recent one. That one, it took me 2 years to make it. I just released it this year. It's 40 minutes. It's a documentary. And it's really about what it means to be at home as a queer person and as a trans person and what that sense of belonging feels like and how we find it, how we create it, how we imagine it. So in 2021, I went to this ghost town in southern Utah for an artist residency, and I shot footage there for 2 weeks. Cisco, do you know them? Do you know?
I don't know them, but I know of them.
Oh yeah.
And to do a river trip right over there outside of Moab, you pass it.
Yes.
My friends were always like, oh, yeah, there's a bunch of, like, queer artists over there.
Yes.
And I think I saw it in the Tribune, like, it was covered in this film that you did.
There's another one. It might have been that one. Okay. There's another one called Cisco Kid, I think, that has, yeah.
Well, either way.
Yeah.
I lit up when Amanda said that. That's
I love that you know that space. It's, like, it's a really special space. Cool. It's really cool. So, yeah, so I was there just for 3 weeks, just by myself, shooting and kind of like performing these questions that I had about queer community and about queer home. And then, I interviewed 18 queer and trans people across the country about their experiences with queer home, and worked with 3 queer musicians to create original music for the film. And then, like, it all came together. And I think of it as a spell because it feels like those are all the things I like threw in the pot, And I am trying to cast a spell that we can cultivate queer home with each other, and that it's possible, and that it's accessible, and that it's already happening, and that it can happen in the future.
So when you say queer home and queer community, like, what is that? What does that look like?
Yeah, I think it means something different for everybody, like, just like queerness does. Yeah. But a lot of what people talked about as queer home in the film is a place where you can really be your full self and be fully accepted and fully whole and at ease in yourself.
Safe to rest.
And people talk about, like, sometimes it's as simple as, like, you know, not getting missed. People get your gender right. People get your name right. You can bring home whoever you're dating or whoever. There's sort of no judgment around that. Yeah. But people also talked about queer home as being like home in your body. Mm-hmm. Lack of dysphoria or queer home practices, you know, so like, yeah, like all the plants people talk about, plants and like growing things and like nurturing things and growing food and what's the art that's on your walls. Yeah. and what's queer about your space, how are you disrupt, which could be
a tiny little rainbow
it could be like this, it could be like somebody's like an earthship house, like that's a queer home in some ways. Yeah. But that it also could be white picket fence, but then you go inside and it's the queerest family. Yeah. You know, so it can be so many things, but I think it's an important project for us to try to name it to each other and to continue that process.
Is chosen family a big part?
Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
Are you working on any other kind of projects that you're excited about? Anything else in the irons?
Well, I'm actually continuing to work on A Spell for Queer Home.
Cool.
Like I said, I interviewed 18 people, and it's a 40-minute film, so there's just little bits of everybody in the film, but I have these amazing interviews. And so I'm working right now on a video series / podcast, maybe, that will be sort of an extension of those stories, focusing in on each person and their queer home experience. And I think that's a project I could keep doing forever. This topic is endless. So
we recently interviewed a professor and Logan, who's doing a photography project about queer couples.
Oh, cool.
Her name's Fazilat Suhaikian.
Good job.
Yeah.
She is really cool.
Cool.
Oh, so cool. And that just reminds me, like, she's going to be doing this project forever.
Oh, yeah,
like, finding different and, like, capturing them and, like, where they feel safe and at home like, with each other.
So interesting.
It's called Queer in Utah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. It's the photography project.
And it was a really cool episode. If folks want to go back and listen to that one, I don't know which one
I cried, but if you want to listen for that.
It was good. It.
Yeah. That's really cool. But yeah, I do think it could be an archive that I just keep adding to. And then, like, how amazing if there was this archive of queer home stories that anybody could visit and touch into. Like we were talking about, like, you get examples and then it becomes more possible for you.
It should not be understated or discounted how important it is to see yourself represented, even if you think someone's already done it, even if it feels like boring or silly. Well, seeing yourself is so important.
So important.
And we're all so unique in thinking about what we've all heard this and we all know this, but the poor representation of queer folks in mainstream film.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Oh my gosh. It's like the queer best friend, the gay best friend.
Yeah.
And but they like, die at the end.
Yeah. Or, and you have to be flamboyant or, yeah, you're the first one like to die. Yeah. And
well, that's why, like, it takes a lot of people to come out because they don't see that representation. Or conscious content's really important. Like, I look back at the stuff I was watching in the early 2000s. Like, oh, that's where that internalized homophobia comes from. I see.
Yeah. But I also want to take that film on tour. Yeah. I have this dream of taking it to, because it was part of it is that queer folks should be safe anywhere, including like rural spaces and wild spaces. And so I really want to take the film to small towns or communes or communities where people are kind of like nurturing queer home in some way, mm-hmm. and then have those deeper conversations. I think that's something I really want to work on this next year, is just really using that film to have conversations with communities. Yeah. And really, like, get into it.
That's beautiful.
That's awesome.
That's cool. Are there any practices that we can do as individuals to build community?
Yeah, that you took out of everything that you've done? I'd be interested to know.
That's a nice question. I think we can all work on actively turning towards each other. Mm. That's the biggest thing that comes to me.
I think I can expand on that, too. You were saying, like, it's not just about having a party at your house every week, and community's not all about the good times. It's having this base of people to support you and hold that grief and hold your vulnerabilities and hold you accountable and be there at your lowest and help with food and just be there for each other, be the village.
I think maybe it's about creating the space for that because, I mean, I'm someone who thought I just had this bottomless pit of yearning, like I could not find what I was looking for. And then I started entering these spaces where people were like, yeah, let's sit down and talk about where we are. Mm-hmm. And that meant so much to me. And then the older I get, the more people seem interested in that. Some people still are like, oh, well, that's kind of lame. But the moment people engage in questions like, what do you have to give and what do you need?
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite circles to do with a group of people. Mm. Just, you know, I have a lot of extra zucchini or I have a lot of plants. Or, you know, I run a lot and I'd be happy to be somebody's running partner.
I have those sort time of, to give if you need a babysitter.
Yeah, stuff like that has been really meaningful.
This sounds weird, but asking for help to me seems like a good way to start.
It's so intimate. It's such an offering of vulnerability. My partner and I talk about this.
And like we've letting had people be a community. Let people support you.
Yeah, yeah. I think somebody reached out to us for help with something and we were both were just like so honored, you know, like because then you let us into your life, you allow us to be part of your life.
You're like, Mary, give people the opportunity to help you.
Yeah, like, it's beautiful.
Told me that so many times. Every time I'm like, Mary, do you need this? And you're like, no. And then you quote that back to me and you let me do it. I think something I ask of everyone is, if you do ask for help, don't apologize, because people are usually honored to be like, hey, like, I'm not feeling too good and I need someone to talk to. Can I talk to you? And they're like, oh, I didn't think that you thought of me as a safe space. And that's so cool.
And
it's thrilled
to be just a safe space for you. Yeah. And again, it models that, like, when I see somebody do that, it literally makes it more possible for me to do it.
Yeah. And then do it to the next person. And it's these tiny, tiny seeds.
Yeah. But the turning towards each other thing, too. I mean that, like, when it gets hard, we turn towards each other. Like, when it gets messy, because that's a part of queer community and queer home, too. And that's a part that comes up in the film. Is there's this quote from one of the participants that I really love, who's like, as a queer person, how do you not identify with trash? And then people are talking about just like messiness and like trash. And that is a part of queer community, because it has to be, like, because perfection is not an option. And
it's like a luxury we don't really have.
It's a luxury we don't have. It's not real.
It's a horrible standard. It's a catch-22 if that's what we expect.
Totally. Totally. So I think an embrace of messiness is so much a part of queer home that we resist it. But if we can embrace it, and then in those moments that are sticky or confusing or hard, or there's disagreement or there's tension or there's questioning, if in those moments we can turn towards each other and be open to evolving together, that's what I'm looking for in my life right now in terms of community. I'm looking for people that are going to be there when it gets a little sticky. And we're going to be able to navigate that together.
Yeah. I hope everybody is able to find that.
Yeah.
That's a good want.
Me too.
Your sticky crew.
Yeah.
Sticky trashy crew.
Yeah, your sticky trashy crew.
Which is the group of raccoons I saw. Sticky trashy crew.
They're a living representation.
Living representation.
Our aspirations.
I felt seen.
Yes. The model that we need.
That we didn't deserve.
Yeah.
Well, before I wrap it up and ask how we can find you, Georgie, do you have any other lingering thoughts and questions?
I had so many. I don't think you finished telling us all the films that you've made.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, A Spell for Queer Home. The one before that I made was called Dear Elsa, 10 Letters and 10 Experiments. And that's the one I mentioned before that was about channeling the artist. And I've made a bunch of short films. I made a TV pilot called Mercy Mistress that is kinky TV pilot. Ooh. Yeah, it was very fun. It's one of my favorite projects I've ever worked on. It was based on the memoirs of a dominatrix in New York City. And
so cool.
Really cool project was made with the BDSM community in New York.
Cool.
And is very, it was a special one for sure. I made a short film called Separation Celebration that is like about how breakups turn into, it's sort of like a fantastical vision of how breakups can be so painful, but then they can turn into like really special connections later. Memory Map was just, it's a very short film that was sort of an experiment with this idea of how we map ourselves onto a city that we live in. So when you pass a corner and you're like, you had one experience on that corner, but you think about it every single time you pass it. I was trying to like make a map of different things throughout the city. So it's a hard one to explain.
I feel like I totally get it.
Okay, cool.
Somebody who is so steeped in Salt Lake City and this neighborhood I went to undergrad almost 10 years ago, started living in this home right over there.
Yeah.
And so, like, this, my map from this home.
Right, like,
I
what if you connected
idea.
Those lines? Like, yeah, and that, like, that project, I was like, I really want other people to make this movie. Like, I want them to make their version of it. So that's, like, something I'd still hope to do someday.
Can we see these films in there?
Yeah, some of them are available on my website. It's amandacmadden.com.
Okay.
C as in cat.
C as in cat. I love that.
And I'm going to release more of them this year, too. So I will do that on my website and through my newsletter.
Cool.
Yes. And I'm sure if they're not released on your website, you still have a mention of them on your website.
Yes.
Okay.
I do.
Perfect.
I do. There's a couple that I'm kind of waiting. The process with film festivals is a little
so
funky. So,
People are like, when can I see it? I'm like, I don't know, a few years?
Yeah.
Maybe.
But I also want people to see it. So I'm also like, if anybody ever emails me and asks me, I will send them the film.
That's awesome. If you could create a documentary with the limitations that you want, what would you do right now?
Ooh, I would make a feature documentary because I haven't done that before and I really want to make one.
What does a feature
like a full length
film. Like a feature film.
Yeah. Like a feature film. So I would make a feature and I would like really... Can I swear?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I would really fuck with the process of how I made it. So I have some ideas for having participants self-document rather than me filming them.
Oh, interesting.
Doing another... it's always going to be personal because I'm like, I have this to work with. So my body and life and experience. So I have the most access to that. So I always like to work with
Start with you.
Yeah. Yeah. And I want to create a documentary where it might take a long time to make it, but everybody who's part of it feels really cared for and feels like their integrity is never in question, or they're never like exploited, or their story is never extracted from them. I want to earn a lot of trust with the people who I'm collaborating with and who I'm trying to share their story. Yeah. And then I make something that's like beautiful, yeah, and like that people feel something when they watch it, and it inspires them to see themselves in a new way, or to see communities in a different way, or like imagine new possibilities. I think that's the biggest part, is like imagination and imagining new ways of being.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. That's a great answer. My last question for you is, if someone is interested in getting into film, which honestly, I think everybody is.
I know everybody should.
But we all prioritize things differently. But if someone's looking to get into film, whether they're, you know, graduating high school, about to finish a master's degree, or just in the middle of their career and they want to get into film, what do you suggest?
Make a film. Take your phone out and just like start shooting some stuff. I am going to be offering more workshops this year. So I hope that that could be a space that could support people who are interested in getting into filmmaking. But I say just try it. If you want to do it, just try it. Just try it and do it.
Yeah, I'd say you be okay making messy art. Be okay trying, getting your feet wet.
Like create some containers for yourself so that it doesn't feel impossible. And that might be, you know, I love thinking about that stuff. Like that might be like, I'm going to shoot 10 30-second shots on my phone today. That could be it, you know? But then it's like, if you put those together, you've got a movie, you know? Yeah. And so that could be your first step. I think film feels really impossible because it's really big if you imagine the end. But if you just imagine each one single step, then it becomes more possible. Yeah.
You eat an elephant one bite at a time.
Yeah.
Or a big tree, because you're a vegetarian.
A big tofu elephant.
Tofu elephant.
One bite at a time.
I will say, when I started this podcast, I guess almost 4 years ago now, one of the things that motivated me to do it was this quote, start before you're ready.
Yeah.
I think about that all the time.
I love that. I love that.
So yeah, just start before you're ready, and then you'll do it a few times, and then you'll be ready eventually to open a podcast episode or whatever it is, make a film. But I think that's a pretty good segue to talk about, you know, if people want to take your workshops, where do they look? If people want to find you, where do they find you on social media? Share with us all your things.
Yeah, so reflectioncollective.com is where you would find anything about Reflection Collective. That'll just link to my website as well, which is amandacmadden.com. And you can find my films there and information about upcoming workshops with Reflection Collective and the Artist Solidarity Club, which is going to start on January 7th. And folks can just drop into that or sign up for all of them. I want it to be a flexible space that kind of works for what people need, but I'm really excited to grow that community this year. And it's literally for anybody who's creative. So if you are creative and want to like be in community around that, it's for you. There's no other
limitation. And they can find that on your website?
Yeah, that's awesome. On my website. And then Instagram, I'm Amanda with a movie camera.
Which is great. I love that. Mary said that earlier and I was like, yes.
If you really want to go deep, you can look up the movie A Man with a Movie Camera, which is the reference.
Ooh, I will. We'll go deep.
Film history.
I love moment. Film history. That's great. Well, thank you so much for coming on. This has been awesome to listen to.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's really been fun.
Yeah, and we should plug our own social media. You can find us on Instagram at Do Care Podcast. And we need to thank AJ Van Zibin for the intro and outro music. Thank you, AJ. And as my pops always says, use your head and be clever.
Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Bye.